The following Dharma talk was given by Katie Yosha Scott Childress. Yosha is a senior student in the Mountains and Rivers Order, a ceramics artist, and a library director here in the Hudson Valley. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or to find out more about our various programs, visit us online at cmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. It's Friday, January 29th, in our New Year's session. My name is Yosha, and I'm a senior lay student here. And today I wanted to talk about body practice and what is body practice. Body practice is one of the eight gates of training that is part of the Mountains and Rivers Order. The other gates include Zazen, Zen study, academic study, liturgy, right action, art practice, and work practice. So I used to know what body practice was. I would do my African dance for the last 9 years. So when Ongo came around, I just got the body practice covered. And when the shutdown happened, my body practice shut down because it relied on live drummers and teachers and other people. It wasn't really something I could do on my own. And so I started questioning what I could do and what is body practice. And it is a similar thing, just exploring practice in this shutdown for a lot of people who have relied on coming to this place and all of the support that we get from the Sangha and the teachers and the training schedule, and everything here is designed to support our practice. And so for those of us who don't live here, I'm just a visitor, but it's been really new territory to find that support within ourselves and from each other via Zoom, live stream, and all of those wonderful things. So I'm still asking myself about body practice and trying to explore that in my own body. Daito Roshi called it the miracle of aliveness. And he said, body practice is not exercise. Body practice is nothing other than washing the face and cleaning the body. It is urination and elimination. It is cooking food and eating a meal. It is healing sickness, actualizing birth, practicing life, realizing death. Body practice is concerned with self-realization through the body. It is realizing that this body is the body of the Buddha, the body of the entire universe. So for me, that feels like very lofty language. And it doesn't give me a place to enter that is simple and concrete enough for me to really practice. It seems like it's coming from a place of realization, but it doesn't really tell me how to get there. So the core of our practice in Buddhism, especially in this school of Buddhism, is Zazen, which is a body practice, a body-based practice. It's seated Zen. And so I've been taking up Zazen as a body practice more and just becoming aware of the subtle ways that I'm holding my body while in Zazen. I notice that I have just kalpas of tension in my shoulders that drop away a little bit at a time. Little muscles drop away as a thought stream is noticed, and then something relaxes. And little muscles in the face that tense up as I'm caught up in thought or emotion, and then relax when that is actually seen. So noticing this connection between what is happening in my mind and my body has been helpful to my Zazen. And I noticed that if I've gotten lost in thought, my body has shifted. And so I need to not only make a mental course correction, but a subtle body correction, because often it'll drift to one side or something will get out of whack. And so it's, at least for me, it's not enough to just notice that I've gotten lost, but I have to come back to my body and recalibrate a little bit. I've also noticed for a long time that the two sides of my face are different when I'm doing Zazen. And, the two sides of my body, my whole body, are really different. And my right eye tends to want to close. And I notice that I get very dreamy, or very quickly I go someplace else. If I just let that eye close, whew, gone. I'm someplace else. And so, you know, it's important for me to keep both the eyes open. It's harder for me to go away that quickly with them open. So we have so many habits in our minds that we get to notice when we're doing Zazen. And we also have habits in our body. The way we sit, the way we hold our mudra, our posture. And relaxing these muscles in our body, it's like loosening our grip. You know, we don't know that our hand, our fist is clenched until we notice it and then we let it open up. The Buddha said we should be like a well-tuned instrument, not too tight, where the strings will break, and not too loose, or else they don't make a sound. So I think about, if you've ever seen a baby sitting down, like maybe a year old, or even a toddler, like you plop them down on the floor, and they sit up completely straight, even though, you know, they're not trying to sit up straight, right? Their little body just does that, and their muscles are completely relaxed, just like butter. But their spine is just there. They're just floating, right? And I mean, that is our body still. We just have all these habits that we've created in our minds and our bodies that, you know, have us doing this and rolling our shoulders forward and tensing up and not knowing how to just sit totally relaxed and totally awake. Master Hongzhi said, you must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all of these tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. So, just noticing so many body habits, walking habits. I notice this one, you know, I see people dance in my dance class. There's so much personality. And it's not always intentional. It's not being able to really see, you know, where you're holding yourself back. So African dance, which has been my body practice, is a challenging practice. I came to it without any background in dance. And so, like, learning to tell my body to do something left, right, one, two, three, four, is really hard and really humiliating. And you know, trying to do it and really failing and looking really stupid would send me into a sort of hell realm of, you know, not only I can't do this, but I'm a horrible person, everybody hates me, you know, on and on. And, you know, just way down until I just notice, like, oh my God, I just missed the last five steps because I was so caught up in my little hell realm. So I had to learn to quiet all of that, what was all those kleshas that were being stirred up in me by doing the, trying to do this thing, learn this thing, and just pay attention. See, even one thing. Can I do one thing? Can I tap one foot? Or, you know, we only have 2 feet. That's what they always say, you only have 2 feet, but it seems like more somehow. You're trying to learn. So I first had to, you know, quiet this self-doubt and then start learning by rote, you know, just, it's kind of like Frankenstein where, you know, you're just like really stiff and just going through the motions, left, right, left. But, you know, you have to sort of make your body do something in order to learn it. And then, you know, start shedding that Frankensteinness, that stiffness, and, you know, start trying to really take up the dance, because the dance is a cultural expression. You know, a lot of the dances are around the harvest, and food is very scarce in Africa, and so you know, a dance of for the harvest is this incredible expression of gratitude. People who have been hungry, you know, for a whole season, and so you want to honor that by being precise and not. Not just holding back, I guess. So learning these dances, you know, it's like really awkward, but do them over and over again, and eventually, maybe if you're lucky, you get to the point where you can actually dance. where you're feeling the music, the drums, and your body already knows the steps, so you're not counting and telling yourself left, right, or telling yourself anything that you need to do. But you're doing the dance, but you don't know that you're doing it anymore. You're just doing it. And that's a really, really, really beautiful moment, and kind of this sort of surrendering. So, is it training the body or is it training the mind? In the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, the Satipatthana Sutra, which is a core Buddhist teaching, Satipatthana is composed of sati, meaning attentiveness directed toward the present. And the second part is setting up or establishing. So I like this attentiveness directed toward the present. The word mindful and mindfulness is so used nowadays in so many contexts. And for me, it sort of has a weight of failure to it. When someone tells me to be mindful, I'm like, oh, God, I can't do that. It's too hard. Whereas being attentive to the present feels like, no, I can do that for now. I think we maybe set ourselves up to think that we can be mindful all the time, and if we're not, that we're failing. At least that's what I think of when I think of mindfulness. So attentiveness to the present. Can we just do that? Just for now. The first foundation is contemplation of the body as a body. And that has four parts. There's attention to the breath, breathing in. I understand that I'm breathing in long or short. And it's such a powerful practice, and we tend to think that there's some loftier practice that we should get to or be doing. But the Buddha did this practice his whole life. And it's so great because it's non-conceptual. When you're breathing in, you just feel it. You don't have to analyze it at all. Your body knows that the air is coming in and going out. We just don't notice it usually, but it's happening all the time. We have to do it wherever we are. And it's also calming. It's naturally calming to notice our breath. Breathe in deeply. And that's really helpful. So the other parts of the contemplating the body as a body are contemplating the body in the four postures of standing, walking, seated, or lying down. When we're walking, we understand I am walking, which seems so obvious, but again, when you think about your habitual way of walking, and most people don't really know that they have a habitual way of walking, but I can identify each person in my family by how they come down the stairs, by the sound of how they come down the stairs. I don't need to know who it is because I already know how they sound when they come down the stairs. And it's because of the way they walk. It's their whole personality is wrapped up in it, right? And we do this too. We carry our intentions around, caught up and where we're going and what we're trying to get done, usually in a hurry. Thich Nhat Hanh teaches this walking meditation. And he says, our ancestors were running. Their cells live on in us. We can stop running when we are in the here and now. Breathing in, taking a step, you say, I have arrived. And exhaling, taking another step, you say, I am home. It's such a powerful practice to remind yourself of that wherever you are and in all of the postures when stress arises, feelings of insufficiency. We can be sitting down, we can be walking, and we can breathe in and say, I've arrived. I'm home. The sixth ancestor said, in what way are calmness and wisdom the same? So this has been translated in different ways, and it's often translated as concentration or meditation. In what ways are concentration and wisdom the same? But I like this translation of calmness, because calmness feels like something I can access with my body. And concentration and meditation are kind of like mindfulness, something that I can fail at, and I have failed at. And, you know, they also feel like something mental. So concentration. In what way are calmness and wisdom the same? They are like the lamp and its light. With the lamp, there is light. Without the lamp, there is no light. The lamp is the substance of the light, while the light is the function of the lamp. In name, they are two, but in substance, they are not different. It is the same with calmness and wisdom. And again, we talk about wisdom and prajna, insight, as something that seems very lofty and difficult. And to think of it as calmness, to me, makes it feel more accessible. It feels like something that maybe I could taste right now in my body. I remember when I was in middle school, I was in a science class and they showed this movie of these little flatworms or some very simple organism, and they shocked them, and then the little organisms quivered. Well, first they shocked them, which I guess hurt them. Wait. First they shined a light, then they shocked them. Then they shined the light, and the little guys started to quiver because they knew they were going to get shocked again. So they created this conditioned response of the light shines, and you're going to get shocked. But then they cut these little things up. They were capable of regenerating from pieces. And this next generation, they shone the light, and it also, those little guys quivered too. And then another generation that had never actually been shocked, they still had a conditioned response. They shone the light and the little things quivered. I feel like this is what our bodies are. And we have so many conditioned responses, you know, racialized trauma, all kinds of trauma, where it's maybe generations past, but somehow it's still in us, in our bodies. I remember when I was pregnant with my daughter, and I thought about that movie and those little critters and how afraid they were. And I didn't have the Dharma practice. I didn't even really know about the Dharma at that time. But I felt like it was really important to cultivate calmness in my body, because I had this little human growing inside of me. And if I let myself get stressed out and upset in my body, then that was doing that to that body that was forming inside of me. So I think without even knowing anything about the Dharma, we know about our body. We know what it feels like to be afraid and to be stressed, feel like things are just too much. And we know what it's like to feel calm and to let that go. So back to the Satipatthana contemplations, you contemplate also the body, the foulness of the body, and all the specific body parts, including pus, feces, bile, sweat, liver, spleen. And we can contemplate that none of those body parts is us. We won't find ourself in any piece of our body, in our liver, our eyeball. There's nothing male, nothing female, nothing inherently us in any of it. And yet there is this really strong sense of, when you put all that together somehow, it's a self. But none of the parts actually contain any of that. So it's helpful to contemplate these parts. And then there's a contemplation of the charnel grounds, seeing a corpse dismembered and decaying. We don't like to see death in this country. And we sort of get our food in this disembodied way. You know, people buy a piece of meat and it's in a package. They don't see an animal, they don't see a body. So this helps us thinking about death, that we will die. And so if we're feeling sleepy or unmotivated or what am I doing this for, we should remember that we only have today and we can't put this off. We will die. So the Buddha says, in this way, a bhikkhu, which is a monk, but let's say a practitioner, abides contemplating the body and its arising factors or its vanishing factors, or else mindfulness that there is a body to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness, and they abide independent, not clinging to anything in the world. So having a body and doing these practices is sufficient, he says. using these practices is how we establish our attentiveness directed toward the present. In case we forget what we're doing. In the Body and Mind Sutra of the Way, or study of the Way, Dogen says, for the time being, let us say there are two approaches to studying the Buddha way, to study with the mind and to study with the body. I think he's saying, let's pretend the body and the mind are two different things. He says, to study the way with the body means to study the way with your own body. It is the study of the way using this lump of red flesh. The body comes forth from the study of the way. Everything which comes forth from the study of the way is the true human body. The entire world in the 10 directions is nothing but the true human body. The coming and going of birth and death is the true human body. And when he's talking about the true human body, he's talking about the body of the Buddha, which in the Mahayana tradition has three aspects, the Dharmakaya, the Sambhogakaya, and the Nirmanakaya. The Dharmakaya is called the truth body, the indestructible body, or absolute aspect of truth, the body of great order, essential reality, the unity of the Buddha with the existing universe, the absolute dimension, the emptiness aspect of Buddhahood, the source of enlightenment and happiness, or the way to realize understanding and love. The Sambhogakaya is enjoyment, bliss body, or purified body associated with the fruit of practice. The bliss body of mutual interdependence. The body of perfect enjoyment. The spontaneous, luminous aspect of Buddhahood, only perceptible to highly realized beings. That's too bad. Then there's the Nirmanakaya, the manifestation body that appears in the world and acts for the benefit of beings, the transformation body of uniqueness and variety, the historical embodiment of the Buddha viewed as one of the many transformation bodies set forth by the Dharmakaya, the physical body. In the Platform Sutra, the sixth ancestor told his disciples to take refuge in the three bodies of the Buddha. And he had a chant, we take refuge in the pure law body of the Buddha with our own physical bodies. We take refuge in the myriad transformation body with our own physical bodies. We take refuge in the perfect reward body with our own physical bodies. He said, the physical body is like an inn and cannot be spoken of as a refuge. It has always been the case that the three bodies lie in one's own nature. Everyone has them, yet because they are deluded, they do not see, and they seek the three bodies of the Tathagata externally without realizing that the three bodies are inherent in one's own physical body. Good and learned friends, listen to your good friend. If you, good and learned friends, now see in your own physical bodies the self nature that involves the three bodies of the Buddha, these three bodies will arise from your nature. I don't think that the Buddha meant for us to have a statue of him carved that we bow to, as if he is something outside of us and to be worshipped. I really think he wanted us to do these practices with our own bodies to know that we are also Buddha, the three bodies of the Buddha. In the that one perfect reward body had said that it was only attainable to very evolved beings, but in this piece from the Platform Sutra, he says, "What is meant by the perfect reward body? One light can illuminate the darkness of 1,000 years, and one bit of wisdom can destroy the ignorance of 10,000 years. Never mind looking back in the past, always consider the future and always make future thoughts good. This is called the reward body. The reward of one evil thought will remove the good of 1,000 years, and the reward of one good thought will destroy the evil of 1,000 years. At times, make the next thought a good, at all times, make the next thought a good one. This is called the reward body. Thinking on the basis of the law body is the same as the transformation body, and making every thought good is the same as the reward body. Achieving enlightenment oneself and practicing the Dharma oneself is called taking refuge. Skin and flesh constitute the physical body. It is an inn and cannot be spoken of as a refuge. If a person understands the three bodies, they will recognize my basic idea." So, speaking of this one evil thought destroying 1,000 years of goodness, and one good thought destroying 1,000. The reward of one good thought will destroy the evil of 1,000 years. So I was thinking about Gokhan's talk from yesterday, and also Yunin's, and noticing when we are having some issue with someone and wishing them peace, wishing them to be free of anxiety, that one thing can take away 1,000 years, destroy the evil of 1,000 years. Or Yunin's, "I would never disparage you." Those are such simple and very deep practices. We shouldn't underestimate how powerful that is, that we can see each other and be able to offer that. So I think about the Buddha and his enlightenment, and he remembered this time when he was a child and he was under this rose apple tree, and he just felt completely at ease in his body, and he remembered that, and that's what helped him to make his way toward final enlightenment, And I think that we can get very complicated about what it means to practice or what enlightenment might be. But I think we can use our experience in our own bodies, the comfort and relaxation of our own bodies, calmness, knowing what calmness feels like. It's like the guy in the last ox herding picture, right? He looks so at ease and happy. It's like, you know, just being able to come home, put on your most comfy sweatpants, let your hair down, you know, don't wear any jewelry or makeup or anything, right? You just feel so comfortable, so at home. And that's what he looks like, right? I don't know if you guys got to see the inauguration, but I felt like our new First Lady, Jill Biden, she was all dressed up in her high heels and designer suit, but she still looked so comfortable. She looked so at ease. She had maybe I was projecting, but I felt she had just this deep calmness about her. Thank God. So the calmness, you know, sometimes you see these bumper stickers and they say, my happy place is on Long Beach Island or Jamaica or something. And, you know, yes, like it feels really happy and calm to go to the beach on vacation and, you know, walk around. But that's not where we live all the time, right? And think about Dr. King and how calm and peaceful he was. Even when people were threatening his life, right? I mean, I know for me, I go into fight or flight mode over very, very minor things, right? Most of the things are imagined. And he had literally people threatening his life. And he would get up and calmly get dressed and walk into the mouth of the beast. So it's that kind of calm. I think that we are really trying to cultivate so that we know what the fierce urgency of now is and we can respond with calm and the wisdom of calm. Dogen's Body-Mind Sutra of the Way, or study of the way, starts with the premise that the Buddha way cannot be attained unless you practice, and without study it remains remote. So what is body practice? Attentiveness to the present with the body, through the body, throughout the body, calmness, one thought to remove 1,000 years of evils. I think we all know. We all know what it feels like to be calm. May your life go well.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.